When you elect a clown, expect a circus. Since we live in ridiculous times, one of the biggest challenges for journalists is to not make their work seem like an article from The Onion. Today, we're joined by writer Katie Reif, who works for various online magazines and is currently news editor for The Onion's non-satirical section, The AV Club.
Listen as we chat with Katie about the controversy of the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Kathy Griffin, and the wonders of an untainted salad bar.
Plus, the creepy implications of how they caught the Golden State Killer.
The viral video phenomenon, everything is terrible.
And a new study says taking a nap will help you sleep at night. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Tell what? Me. What? Oh, you want to know?
Yeah.
So we were talking to Katie Reif about... Did I say your last name right?
Yeah, you
okay.
did.
Okay. Reif.
Just
Reif
like her life.
Yep. Reif like Reif with corruption. That's like the only...
That way you ever use that.
No, it's the only way that it's ever really used in the English language. Mm-hmm. Like, technically it means plentiful or, you know, just being the state of being full of things.
That sounds appropriate.
It's true. It rhymes with strife.
Rhymes with strife. We were talking because you wanted to know how you said something in Spanish, and we were talking about nouns and adjectives. And in Spanish, some adjectives go before the noun, and some go after.
Right. Most of the time, they go the other
día,
way.
You know, like the new day. Mm-hmm. Like, it comes beforehand.
El nuevo día.
But, like, if you say, like, how do you say ball again?
La bola roja.
So that goes back.
And in English, instead of the red ball. So you put the adjective after the noun.
Right.
But in English, we have our adjectives almost always go in front.
Okay.
Except for one word.
What word
are you
is
really
that?
Gonna make me come up with
this? No, you're not gonna come up with
staring at me.
You'll never guess.
It's, no, I'll never guess. What is it?
The word is royal. So you can say the princess royal. Or the casino royale.
Or a battle royal.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. Because that it's the French influence on the monarchy in the UK.
Ooh la la.
You learn something every day on the UK. People are always like, Mark, how do you know all these things? I'm just like, you just pick them up.
I read.
Our guest today is writer Katie Reif, who works for various online magazines and is currently news editor for The Onion's non-satirical section, The AV Club. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Katie.
Hi, I'm so excited. I have listened to the podcast for many years. So.
The Onion just got bought out by Univision, so
that's
I want to make you more comfortable and say, Bienvenidos, Katie Reif!
It's true. Thank you. We were their first foray into English language media. They wanted to break into the English language market, so they bought The Onion, and they bought Gawker. So we're the same company as Gawker now.
And Gawker is still... Wait, didn't they...
Gawker's not around anymore. So they changed the name to, it used to be called Gawker Media Group, and now it's called Gizmodo Media Group. They had another site that started with G, so they didn't have
they
to
don't have
it.
To pay that Hulk Hogan all that money, do they?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Univision has to pay that bill?
No, Univision doesn't. Okay. I think it's on the guy that started Gawker.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah.
And Univision owning The Onion sounds like a headline from The Onion.
Yes, it does, but it's real.
Were you guys a little bit analyzing how to make that announcement to make it feel like the public would believe you? Because this is like the boy who cried wolf to some degree, right?
Well, that was something, I don't know, do you want me to get like really like inside
baseball? Yeah, I want to know.
Well, you would have a story in like the Wall Street Journal or something like that. Like that's how you would break the news, is you would have a like a very serious publication like the Wall Street Journal. Publish it is how you would.
Has The Onion in its history, I don't know if you're able to answer this, ever sort of made parody headlines of itself?
Yes, there was one recently that I really liked. It was called, the headline was, "We don't make any money unless you click on the fucking link." And that was sort of a self-referential headline that we did that I just loved. I thought it was so funny because it's true. Mm. Click on the link. Refresh it twice if you like it. Just refresh.
Do the same on Feast of Fun, of course.
Yes.
One of my favorite articles is when they, what was it? My life is aboard a whale ship, and they just reprinted did the entirety of Moby Dick.
Yeah.
They just cut and copied it from like the Library of Congress website or something, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And we did another self-referential one because we just joined the Writers Guild of America. We just unionized. And so we did a headline that was like, groveling, ungrateful onion staff votes to unionize is how we announced that one. So, yeah.
You know, you're lucky you're able to do that. Nuna Vision didn't just shut you down like it happened to, what, DNA Chicago, was it? DNA Info.
That guy was, doesn't that guy like own the Cubs or something like that?
He owns the Cubs, yeah. It's that family. He also greatly supported President Trump in his election campaign.
Of course, yeah. Because, that was terrifying. Oh my God, that was so scary.
Because DNA Info, for those people that don't, they were national, right? But they were kind of, they were locally based in different communities, and we had one that was very strong here, and it was a big source of community reporting, and then it was bought by a billionaire, and as soon as the idea of, like, these people might unionize, he was just like, forget about
it. Just shut it down. Mm-hmm. They also had Gothamist and LAist were also part of the same thing. Yeah.
The Onion has had such a profound influence on not just comedy, but the way we think about news. Mm-hmm. And now we live in ridiculous times. When you elect a clown, you get a circus, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I imagine because you work as a serious journalist in the non-parody part of The Onion, the AV Club.
Yeah. Well, serious journalist in quotation marks because we're a pop culture website. So, like, we don't interact with the world of serious politics all that often. Recently we did. Just this last week, where there was a story that was like actual breaking news that I was actually reporting on, you know, from like the press conference, which is frankly pretty unusual for us.
What was it?
It was when they caught the Golden State Killer, because we had talked about the book I'll Be Gone in the Dark on the website, and Patton Oswalt is like a friend of the website. Mm-hmm. We've done a few things with him in the past, and anybody who doesn't know, do you want me to?
Let's get into it.
Because I'm fascinated by this
Patton
case.
Oswald is the voice. Didn't he do the voice for Ratatouille?
Yeah, he did.
And he's a very loved and celebrated comedian in the United States.
If you pay attention to comedy at all, you've watched a show with him on it. He's been on everything.
And he's celebrated because of his, not just because of his material, but of he's kind of a visionary. He's a very, he's an intellectual comedian in many regards.
I don't know about intellectual per se, but he's very like, his viewpoint is very, he parodies, he's like a lifelong like kind of nerd, and he parodies that culture like really affectionately, which is, I think, part of the reason why people love him so much. And he also is just like...
But he's an intelligent comedian.
Oh, absolutely he is. Absolutely is. I just mean he's not like, he's not joking about like the IMF or anything like that.
And then most recently he had a huge tragedy, a personal loss. Yes. He lost his wife to cancer.
No, she died very suddenly. She had like an undiagnosed heart condition, and she just passed away like in her sleep. Very suddenly. Yeah.
And she was working on a book, right?
And she was a true crime writer and was working on a book about a case called the Golden State Killer, which was this sort of like obscure thing that not that many people knew about. And it wasn't famous. You know, you have your Charles Manson is famous or whatever, but this guy wasn't famous at all.
Because his identity was unknown.
Right. It was an unsolved case. And she was like really obsessed with it and wrote an article for LA Magazine about it and got a book deal off that. And she had like, she was like 2/3 of the way done with this book, and they were starting, they were working with all these investigators and starting to narrow in on the identity of this serial killer that she dubbed the Golden State Killer. He didn't have a name before, but she gave him a name.
Names help, right?
Yeah.
You gotta brand that serial killer.
Yes. Honestly, if you want ID to run a special about it, then
What if we have, like, the Green River Killer, the Boston Strangler, the Hillside Strangler.
The Night Stalker.
Yeah. You gotta have a gimmick.
Right.
If you wanna get a headline.
So she was working on this case, and then she just very suddenly passed away. But after she died, there were two researchers that she was working on the book with. Those two guys and Patton got together and said, we want to finish this book. We want the book to still come out. This was like her purpose in life. We want the book to come out. And the book came, and so they published like I read the book, like three quarters of it is her original manuscript. Mm-hmm. And then there's an afterword by Patton Oswalt, kind of like talking about like everything that happened, like right up around and right after she died. And then there's the part of it is just like basically notes with like notes from the researchers, like, well, we had this and this and this. And the book came out in March. And the whole thing was like, oh, my God, that's so sad. She died without, you know, mm-hmm. finding the killer. And the killer's probably never going to get found. Oh, man, what a crazy, poignant story. And then they found the dude a month after the book came out.
And it's crazy. And, you know, he thought maybe, like, the book had something to do with it. And there is an idea that because she had this book out there, that there was public pressure to
yeah.
and that they knew to it was coming it because of that again. Article that came out 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Right.
To examine it, and there was pressure, and people, now that he's got a name, we can really try and get it together.
But right.
It was interesting the way that they got him. It's interesting, but also in some ways kind of scary.
It's definitely one of those things where it's like, I don't object to this being used to catch a serial killer, but the implications are kind of crazy.
So to clarify this, they caught the killer by going into DNA databases to match his DNA with the DNA they found in crime scenes.
He left a lot of DNA material behind because he was a rapist and a killer, yeah. right? And so he left, I assume, his semen. And
right, because so this was before DNA was a thing, so it wasn't really evidence.
So you didn't think about it. You know, people didn't really think about it.
The guy was a cop.
Yeah. And so, and he probably stopped as soon as they figured, like, DNA was happening.
Yeah, that's a theory.
I don't think he's committed that many crimes recently. So they went and looked in the criminal database, and they didn't find anything. So they just entered the DNA that they had to something called GED Match, which is kind of like Ancestry.com or, you know, 24andMe or 26andMe, whatever that is.
23andMe.
I don't know how many chromosomes I have.
It sounds like a dating website for people who do well in the GED.
And so, you know, anybody...
You're a nerd, too.
And anybody can create an account. You can put your DNA up there. Some people can put a fake name up there, you know, but some people use their real name. And so the cops just uploaded his DNA and saw a familial match. They found a familial match with... And so they were just like, this guy fits the age, you know, the location. So they went and the guy just kind of like pulled over and watched his house and they followed him. And then eventually they saw him discard something, like a glass I think he was using.
Yeah, or like a cigarette butt or something like that.
And so they picked it up. They did a DNA match in 4 hours and they found it. And then they just went and arrested the guy. And they're like, boom.
Because it was 100% match. Yeah. It was like, yep, this is the guy.
So I think he's like 76 years old now or something. And he did most of these crimes some 30, 40 years ago.
Should we be worried about the privacy implications of solving crimes like this?
I mean, it is a little Orwellian that they can, you know, it's sort of like how we're constantly giving away our location. If you have like the Wi-Fi on your iPhone, then, you know, they can they can track your movements.
If you allow your location to be tracked by a certain app, yes.
But yes.
At least, you know, for legal purposes, in terms of like different operating systems have different restrictions.
Right. But I mean, yeah, it's sort of like the thing where, because somebody, like whoever the relative of this guy was who uploaded their DNA onto this database, they did that voluntarily. And when you click allow for the app, like track your location even when you're not using the app, when you click allow, you are volunteering this information technically, but I think people don't really think about the implications of it that much. Sure. They're like, yeah, whatever, click.
They're like, I have nothing to hide. Well, there was a case here in Chicago. There was a serial killer on the south side of Chicago, and so the police went around and just asked people. I said, we're having a hard time finding out who this guy is, but we do have DNA, so we're asking people to come forward and give us samples of your DNA so we can see if we can find a familial match.
Yeah.
And they did. And so, like, because a bunch of people were, like, worried, because I think, like, 6 or 7, I think African-American women were murdered on the south side, and they did find a familial match, and then they found the killer.
Wow.
So, in terms of writing for the AV Club, and the AV Club gets its name sort of when the geeks and the cultural kids who were passionate in high school got together in the audiovisual club.
Yes, making little, like, high school, you know, the morning news in high school, stuff like that.
I was in the AV Club.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. School. Yeah. We didn't have one.
Well, I mean, we didn't call
yearbook.
It. I was in Puerto Rico, so we didn't call the, you know, el club audiovisual.
I was
involved in a lot of, like, you know, screening films and doing the newspaper and all that kind of stuff, you know. And that part of it was like, it was a way for us misfits to come together based on our passion for popular culture.
Oh, absolutely. Like, sort of, I would think it's like sort of a similar type of person as theater kids, only like less outgoing. Sure, you know what I mean? Sure. Like, you're not really a performer, but you're really into, like, I don't know, making up stories and that kind of stuff. But you just are more comfortable behind the soundboard or behind the camera instead of in front of it.
Mm. You're like, have you heard Zippy the Pinhead? Have you read this comic book? It's amazing. Blow your mind.
all the comic books, that's what you want.
Because that's what we were into. This is written
Zippy
from
was big.
Zippy in the 80s, man. If you were a misfit, if you were a countercultural person, Bill Griffith's comic book, Zippy, was where it was at.
Oh, wow.
It was hugely influential. And I think it was because of that character, this, you know, the pinhead clown, was fascinated with popular culture in a way that now seems kind of mainstream, right? The way we think about the humor, and we'll get into everything is terrible later on, but it is looking at our culture when it's not trying to be funny in a humorous way.
Right.
Right. And I think that's such an important way of looking at things that in the 1980s, we just didn't have.
Well, it's so ubiquitous now in movies and on TV and that sort of, like the reference-based stuff. Yeah, totally.
Like, if you compare the Avengers films to, like, say, the early Superman films by Richard Donner, you know, there was, like, the humor is so much more sophisticated now.
Mm-hmm. And, there's a lot more of just, like, just hanging out with them. And I'm behind on the Avengers movies. I watched half of Age of Ultron on TV today because I was like, I think I need to know what everybody's talking about. I've been trying to get someone to just tell me who dies in Infinity War because I don't really want to spend the time to see Infinity War, but I want to know what happened, and nobody will tell me.
I'll tell you after the podcast.
Okay. Please.
Okay. Or you can just stick around. Brian Sweeney's coming in right after you. You can just sit here and listen to us talk about Infinity War. Because we our reviews are filled with spoilers.
So you're not necessarily the Onion, right? Not necessarily, but not necessarily the humor. Remember the HBO series, not necessarily the news?
Yeah.
You guys
That's
are
kind
not,
of like us, yeah.
But backwards, you actually are the news.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I would think, when you're trying to explain, like, the AV Club kind of voice, it's sort of like, you know what The Daily Show does with politics, or last week Tonight with John Oliver does with politics? We do that with pop culture, with, you know, like, movies and TV and film, where we have serious reviews. Our TV reviews are, like, our big thing, our bread and butter. People
love TV.
People love, and they love talking about TV. So we have, you know, we recap popular shows, and we do reviews of movies, and that's what I do besides news, is I do movie reviews. And then we just report on, like, popular culture news of the day. But that's kind of expanded a little bit. When I first started, we did a lot more of just, like, so-and-so got cast in this movie. And now it's expanded more to where it includes, like, we'll talk about, like, updates on Facebook. Or we talk about net neutrality a lot. Things we've kind of expanded to include the internet as popular culture, because it is. It's, like, a lot of people spend more time looking at Twitter and memes and stuff like that than they spend watching television or watching movies. And so we've sort of expanded our definition to include the internet now. And that's something that gets covered a lot, like in the what we call short form, the news stories.
And so I imagine that, like, your friends and family are always like, you know, Katie, this would be a great headline for the Onion.
Constantly. Listen, Chase, you're my brother-in-law, and I love you very much. But he sends me a lot of story stuff. A lot of, like, oh, you should write about this. And I'm like,
one of my favorite Onion headlines, and I'm sure you get this all the time, people like, my favorite thing from Onion is this, because people are so passionate about the Onion. Was the Weird Al Yankovic is sick of people trying to tell him what songs to parody from.
Yeah.
And he, all his song parody ideas were, like, about food. Living La Vida Mocha.
right,
was about coffee or something, you know, and part of it is like, with, you know, the job as a journalist, like, for, we get this a lot, you know, instead of someone saying, I love this entertainer or this drag queen or this musician, and I think they would be a great guest on your show. Thanks, Robin Panakia, for introducing to Katie Rife.
Yay, Robin.
And actually making it happen, right? Mm-hmm. They just say bluntly, just, you know, oh, you know who would be great? Cher. Cher would be a great guest on your show.
I'm trying to get Cher because she's got the Cher show coming.
Yeah.
Her own podcast?
No, it's a musical, a Broadway-bound musical. It's going to open here in Chicago starting in June.
Is she starring in it?
She's probably going to show up for some kind of one of the premieres or something like that. But no, they're going to have three different women playing Cher during her lifetime. So a younger Cher, a middle-aged Cher, and then the timeless Cher.
So it takes three women to stand in for Cher, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And of course, the musical is going to start with, if I could turn back time. You know, and then they pull back the curtain, young Cher comes out.
Mm-hmm. Cher's Twitter is really great.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite.
Great use of emojis.
Yes, yes. Oh, like, I love it.
Does she have somebody, like, come up with those emojis for her, right?
No, I like to think she's just sitting on her couch, just typing them out and laughing
What's
to herself.
What's emoji for asshole?
Yeah, exactly.
You would, you know, the part of their phone where it shows the emojis you've used recently.
Yes.
I would love to see a screenshot of Cher's.
Let's tweet her. Let's all tweet her. And
let's all tweet at Cher and be like,
most used emojis
recently
lately.
Used. Yeah.
And so, you know, like in terms of like develop, like, I'm curious to hear how you and the writers and the editors and all kind of get together and decide sort of what to focus on besides, you know, popular culture.
Right.
So to differentiate yourselves from the parody part of The Onion.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we did a lot of politics in the aftermath of the 2016 election because I think all of us were having trouble thinking about anything but politics. And so we leaned heavy on politics for a little while, and we made a conscious decision to kind of back off of that, partially to differentiate ourselves from The Onion because we were doing like kind of like jokey takes on, you know, horrible stuff Donald Trump did, and The Onion was doing that too. And so we made a conscious decision to kind of like dial it back a little bit and let them shine because they absolutely shine in that area.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's like The Onion just has its sort of pet areas that you know respect the boundaries in, and politics is one of them. But also is kind of like everyday life kind of stuff. Some of my favorite Onion articles are ones like, there was a headline recently where I was like, did one of those motherfuckers see me walking out of the office and come up with this headline? The headline was like, it is spring, says freezing cold woman. Because I like, because
that's you.
That's me. It was like a month ago. I was walking around with no coat. I'm like, it's fine. It's springtime. And then, you know, and just being so miserable the whole time. But I think the big
spring.
Difference between us is we're more reactionary. Like stuff happens and we report on it. Right. And they're out in front of things. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. So they're sort of predicting Trump winning, becoming president.
Right. And we're responding
to him being president.
Right. Like when Bill Cosby was convicted the other day, I think they had things already prepared.
Oh, they did. Sure.
In really big events, they'll have things prepared.
Well, that's what a lot of people don't realize with newspapers is that, you know, if somebody's likely to die, they already have written the obituary far ahead of time that sometimes they run the obituary before the person even gets sick and dies.
It's so mortifying. I feel so bad. Mm-hmm. People Magazine did that last year, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, you guys. Like, I felt for them, you know?
I have Fausto's obituary already written. Just waiting to put it out there.
I'd like to read it.
Oh, it says lots of lovely things.
I miss you.
What do you make of the Bill Cosby verdict?
Didn't think it was going to happen, and it did, and I'm honestly like, good.
Yeah.
Good. That whole thing's been going on so long.
A lot of people that really just think that these women are just, you know, they all made it up.
Every last one of them, right?
Yeah
because they're all so famous. Like, name two of them.
Right.
Well, this is the power of viral videos. Is, you know, Hannibal Buress's comedy and his bit on Bill Cosby is what sort of awoke this.
Yeah, and we were one of the first ones to report on that. That's one of the. That's when I first started working at AV Club, and it's still one of the biggest stories I've ever done. And I was just like, "Oh wow, that's really interesting that he talked about that on stage last night." And then, so I wrote about it, and then a bunch of other outlets started writing about it, and then it blew up into a whole thing.
Katie, I'm a huge fan of your interesting, fascinating path to where you are today.
Thank you.
Because you are somebody who had a big hand in setting up and developing the, I don't even know how to describe it, the Viral Video Collective. Everything is terrible.
Viral Video Collective is a really good way to put it.
And of course, you guys are fans of these. Inevitably, everybody's a fan of these videos. The cat massage therapist.
Yeah, the cat massage lady.
How did you guys find? And let me just read some of these. Yogi for kids, a yogi ogi dogi.
Yogi ogi dogi.
Who has these kind of really demented rooster.
Yes.
He was a Rastafarian rooster.
Yes.
Come on, kids.
And the cow, and they're all doing yoga. Yeah, yeah, it's so fun.
ET porn, where it's, I guess this is a German porn.
German porn, but it's confusing because the one we had Portuguese subtitles, but it's actually a German porn.
Yellow Dino, who kind of looks like it's kind of like a Barney for Barney and Friends, but it's a giant yellow dinosaur that looks like Woodstock from Snoopy, giving information to kids on how to avoid pedophiles.
Yes. Oh my God. There is a Yellow Dino video that we put on Everything is Terrible, where there's a scene where he's like barging through the doors of this like creepy guy who is taking inappropriate photos of little girls, and they don't really get into the, you know, the dirty details, but there's a little girl who's telling Yellow Dino, a man wanted to take pictures of me and I felt really uncomfortable. And then in like a few scenes later, Yellow Dino bursts through the doors and he's wearing like a leather jacket. He's wearing like an Indiana Jones leather jacket, and he bursts through the door, and then the sleaze guy is just sitting on his desk. You know, and it looks like a kid's show. It's got like PBS kids show production values. And he starts screaming, where are the pictures? Show me the pictures. And it turns into a fucking like Al Pacino movie for a minute. And only it's the Yellow Dino.
And this is for kids?
It's for kids.
There's a video. Zen and the Art of Screaming.
Yeah.
And All Hail the Great Satan. Where did you guys like, you know, before the internet was a thing, like me and my friends in Austin, Texas, we would share these rare, strange videos that we'd find in libraries and in Blockbuster videos, kind of obscure section.
Yeah.
We would copy them and share them around with each other. How did you guys come about with so many great things?
Yeah, I mean, there were, like you were saying, like video, like tape swapping was definitely a thing going back to the 80s, where people would make tapes, and TV Carnage was one that came before us that was a big influence on us. And there was another one called Lost and Found Video Night that I was really obsessed with when I was like 18, 19 years old. They put out DVDs and you had to like order the catalog and then order it from the catalog because they didn't have a website.
What was like the earliest viral, non-viral video that you shared with your friends that you guys loved to watch over and over and over again?
Oh my God. Oh man. I forget the name of the movie, but it's this movie. It's not Bollywood. It's one of the smaller Indian Tollywood. It's like Tamil, I think. And there's a scene where this guy is like chasing another guy on a horse, and he runs through this market, and then he just jumps through like all these planes of glass and stuff, and it's just like this insane horse chase. That's probably the first video I remember seeing and being like, what the fuck? I need to see this whole movie. Yeah.
One of the things that we shared with my friends was the audition tapes for a high school production of Cats.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And all the kids were like in leg warmers and high hardcore 80s clothing doing solo performances to like Michael Jackson's Thriller. And then they had the entire high school students doing Jellicle Cats. And you know, and the choreography is so, it's as if it's pulled out of a, you know, 1985 Saturday Night Live video,
right? Or, totally,
you know, just really humorous. And part of the thing is that these videos all had in common was, and another one that I remember and I loved watching again was these Christian fundamentalists had a bunch of people who are hardcore Christians with accessibility issues, right? Mm-hmm. So you had a woman who was in a wheelchair, you had a kid with Down syndrome, you had people who had, you know, different types of, you know, situations that they sounded really strange.
Right.
And so there was a guy who he would just be like, "God bless you, honey," over and over in this video. And this one, and we just loved saying that over and over again, you know?
Yeah, when you're talking about it, like, all these ones are coming back to me. Like, they're all flooding back. There's Grill Skills, which is the Wendy's training video from the early 90s.
I love that. The wrapping.
Yes, the wrapping burgers. Yes. Mm.
That is like, if you got, you know, the Frosties, shake goes up to three quarters.
And it's like, how's it go? If it's brown burp, broken or incomplete, that baby turns into chili meat.
Yeah, because if they break the burgers.
Yeah.
It was a training video.
Yeah. It was how to make burgers at Wendy's. And that's an amazing one. And Flirting with Magic was another classic, which is this video for like awkward dudes in the early 90s about how to talk to girls by doing magic tricks.
Oh, how cute.
I know. It's so sad and cute. And then the other one, this was one of the first ones I remember buying, because this is back when I lived in Athens, Ohio. And all around there, it's just like Appalachia. It's like deep, holler, weird, snake handling, fundamentalist, weird stuff going on around
there.
Is
that where you grew up?
No, it's just where I went to college. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay. Yeah.
Home of the weird chili.
Yes. Speaking of chili.
One of the stars of this whole like pre-internet video virality was performance artist Alex Bagg. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. And it was she did this brilliant video series called Fall of 1995. I think Fall of 95, where she before video blogs were a thing, she video blogs as an art student through every semester of school.
Okay.
And so she starts off like, "Oh, art school's going to be so much fun," you know, and stuff. And she goes through an emo phase and all this stuff. Between those little video blogs, she does different characters, which is, you know, like Saturday Night Live, just as funny, but with a very edgy, dark angle to it. And she did this one where she was two women who are working a clothing store when they're not at the store, they are in a new wave band together.
Oh my God.
And they're like, "Yeah, I'm so glad we're in a band, because otherwise our lives would be so boring."
Yeah.
"Right. I wrote a song. Do you want to hear it? Okay. Here it goes. Was it a world's a mess? Buy this dress." So they're started analyzing in pop music culture, and it's like, I'm trying to remember it off. I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
Yeah.
And they had these great song moments, and one of them she was like, "Yeah, guitar solos are so boring. I hate guitar solos."
So was she actually in art school during the video diary, or that was just a character?
This is a character she all played.
Oh, that's fun.
And this is a part of it is like, you know, that Alex Bagg sort of she was actually at drag con recently.
Yeah, RuPaul's Drag Con. She did a panel. Yeah. I think it was being on with Rollins, maybe on something.
Henry
Unpumped.
Rollins, yeah. And I've tried to reach out to her. Like, she is like disappeared. She and one of the early viral sensations was Vaginal Cream Davis,
who
wrote tons of stuff for, you know, before The Onion existed. Kind of similar, you know, personality, news culture, like Michael Musto. She was.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Vaginal Cream Davis.
And these people, you know, these people are so, they just disappeared. They are like nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I guess they're out of the game now, or they saw the internet and went, "Nah."
That's part of it is like, now we have this unprecedented ability to access everything.
It's
true.
And
everything is terrible and amazing.
It's true. I know it's a total like stoner thought, but all the time I'm like, it's pretty crazy that I have right here next to me on the table
a phone
that has the entirety of most of the entirety of human knowledge within it, and that would completely blow my, you know, anybody from anywhere else in history. That sounds like magic.
Mm-hmm. But don't you get annoyed when somebody asks you like a question that they could just search for on the internet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of the website Let Me Google That For You?
Yeah.
It is so passive aggressive, mm-hmm. and I
use it from time to time.
I want
to
do it all the time.
Especially when something really basic. But sometimes, though, too, is like, you know, you don't want to lose that art of conversation, you know, when somebody tells you, like, about something, and then they're just like, "Oh, just Google it." And you're like, well, no, I want you to tell me. Yeah. Like, why is it special to you?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. But when it's also like, what date is that thing on? And you're like, Google it.
Just do what I'd have to do. Google it.
What date does this movie come out?
And people Google always be like, it. How do you get a hold of, like, can you get me in touch with this person or that person, that celebrity? I'm just like, just do what I would do. Tweet them.
You know? Yeah.
Well, like, a lot of celebrities don't read their tweets. Mm-hmm. And a lot of celebrities don't have a website with, you know, contact me at scottthompson.com.
Right, that's true.
Like, we've been trying to get Scott Thompson on the show from Kids in the Hall for 10 years now, almost. Yeah. And he's just impossible to get a hold of.
He's coming to do the Buddy Cole monologue.
I know. Yeah. I know. And that's extremely influential. I mean, talk about people. Somebody.
That's coming up real quick, too. Is it the end of the month?
Yeah, end of May.
End of May.
That's actually part of our comedy festival, the AV Club Comedy Festival.
Do you have a contact for him?
I may be able to help you out with that.
I would appreciate that.
And that's the thing about it is, it's like, you know, I hear these entertainers and celebrities, that no one's interested in me. I'm like, no one can get a hold of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you might read your emails.
Your publicist just deletes everything.
But I think also, you know, like, it's got to be really overwhelming to have millions of Twitter followers and people tweeting at you all the time. Like, I think after a while, if it was me, I would just stop looking at my mentions because it's just like, it's too much.
I've seen some entertainers come in to our home studio and they're literally click, 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 click on their phones.
The whole time.
The entire time. And I'm like, I'm right here. I'm a human being.
Yeah. I don't know. I look at the internet pretty much for my job, you know, because I need to be looking for stories and finding news. And honestly, in the entertainment world, a lot of that happens on Twitter now. That's where people announce that they're doing things. They'll post a picture of them doing something, like that kind of stuff. And, you know, especially album reveals are all last minute, the things that drop on Twitter. And so you have to be very fast to, like, mm-hmm. jump on that mm-hmm. stuff. Like I was saying before, this week was unusual because, you know, we were reporting on the Golden State Killer thing because of Patton Oswalt.
Because he was just in town, too, yeah, right? And there's a video of him, and he just, somebody sent him a message. He's sitting there on the plane, and he had, did he pop a zit on his nose?
I don't know.
He's got, like, this bloody thing on the middle of his face.
He bumped his nose on the door for, I don't know.
Okay. Because I was just like,
I don't know. I fell down in the street last week, so I can't judge.
So there's this bloody thing. Somebody had some, like, a thing of concealer to put over. I'm like, well, that's nice, but you can't conceal on blood.
Yeah. I'm always doing stuff like that, so you know.
You know, and right now, certainly with the right wingers, you know, Trump and so on and so forth, sort of targeting journalism.
Yeah.
As a public enemy number one.
I'm sure we're going to be on a list.
We're on a list already.
I mean, I've been on a list for a long time. The CIA,
I imagine I'm on a list.
They say that Trump is collecting a list, but I'm sure the list has already been around.
Yeah.
Well, like, Mark and I are not associated with a giant corporation like Univision. And so sometimes I feel that we're targeted just for the fact that we don't have this mother hen sort of protecting
us. It's true.
Us,
yeah, you guys would be easier to target. Yeah.
And certainly, like, I feel, you know, nervous sometimes when I speak my mind on the show or post something on social media. You know, people have been like, you've been so wholesome so recently. And I'm like, well, it's because I'm fearing for my life sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
And cancer.
But the thing is, though, like, sometimes I say stuff on AV Club because, like, you know, we do real news, but we'll put in, like, kind of comedic commentary, and I can be really kind of biting sometimes. Like, kind of, like, you know, cynical in my humor. And I say stuff sometimes that I'm like, oh, I'm going to get in such trouble for this on the internet. And then nothing happens. And then I'll write something that I think is perfectly innocuous. And, like, I'm not even being mean. And people will be so mad at me. Like, last summer, I had to go dark on social media for a while because I was scared I was going to get doxxed because I, like, got on the wrong side of some shock jock guy who's, like, you know, like, it was part of Opie and Anthony.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Yeah, they're notorious.
Yeah, their fan base decided that they hated me. And so I had to, like, go offline for a few weeks because it got, like, really intense and kind of creepy.
What was the fight over? Do you mind me asking you?
I had wrote an article about how Opie had gotten fired for over some, like, I can't even remember the details, but it was something about like Opie getting fired from the show. And I made some crack about how Anthony had already gotten fired. And then so he like tweeted at me and was basically like, go after this fat cunt. And so they did. And so I had to deal with that for like weeks and weeks. I was just being me. I was just kind of like, and was I being a little shady? Yes. Being like, this is the second person to get fired off of this show. You know what I mean? I was being a little shady.
It seems pretty innocuous, but though.
It was
really
pretty innocuous. Like, I was stating a fact. Yes. Yeah. I wasn't making anything up. I was stating a fact that this guy had already been fired from the show for, I think it was some kind of sexist comment or something like that. And, yeah, that was intense.
Well, that's so, something like, you know, we deal with mostly pop culture, pretty lighthearted kind of stuff, you know, and we do speak our mind about politics, and every now and then there's just some, you know, person who feels like we're interfering with their politics, and they're like, Feast of Fun needs to be canceled, you know, or this is that's a term that they say. Haven't they been canceled yet? And I'm like, when you're working for yourself, you know.
Yeah. Who's going to cancel you?
Yeah. Nobody. People are still listening.
Well, people are saying Michelle Wolf, the comedian, who just most famously roasted Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
What was the joke she said that everyone's so mad about?
I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Maybe she's born with it, but maybe it's lies. Yeah, it's definitely lies.
That's not that bad of a joke.
So they feel like she, as a woman, is attacking another woman based on her looks. And I'm like,
no, they're not.
That's not low on her looks.
No, she that's not her makeup, looks.
But she's saying that
it's
she uses makeup.
It's her bad taste in product.
Well, and also that she's a liar.
I knew their looks.
You know? Well, she probably was like, well, she's got these crazy eyes, but it's like, how do we talk about how crazy her eyes look? And she's
right, without,
eye,
well, yeah.
Like, you know, so it was a long process getting
to that.
She
doesn't even wear a smoky eye.
She does a lot, sometimes.
She does.
I'm an aficionado of smoky eyes, and yes. I definitely have noticed Sarah Huckabee Sanders' smoky eye.
Oh, okay. I just know she wears a lot of eyeliner, but beyond that.
Eyeshadow. When you use eyeshadow above and below your eye, that's called a smoky eye.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's basically it.
I know
it
how
is.
To do a winged eye, and that's all I have. Like, that's it.
What's that's that? It. The little thing, right?
Yeah, that's, and like with the liquid eyeliner, it's kind of hard. You have to like go like bink and do a little, draw the line like this, and then bink.
So it
and
makes
they have
it
to
look
match
like you have
on
a little
sides.
Eyelash, but you're actually painting it with
so it gives you that kind of cat eye look. Mm-hmm. That's that is my only eyeliner skill.
Michelle went on to say, media loves Trump. Are you sure you guys didn't go on a date and you're still in love with him? After all, he's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You've helped create this monster, and now you're profiting from him.
That's not even a joke. That's just real.
That's just calling it out. I was like, I'm waiting for the punchline, but, you know, sometimes the punchline is like, we know we suck.
Yeah, that's just real.
But isn't this just like, you know, it's so easy to beat up on journalists. I mean, you know,
we get beat up on a lot. You know.
Well, I feel, don't you feel like, especially since Trump has taken office, that, you know, he's really tried to villainize the media?
Absolutely.
And I often felt like early on, just from being this podcaster working primarily on the internet, is like big media has always tried to like villainize like the independent bloggers, where people that live in people's basements. When you think about like one of the bloggers, the most famous bloggers in the world, you know, the ones that the big media held up and were like, this is the blogger, it was Perez Hilton, who's a total asshole. And I think the reason why they raised him up was to make all of us seem like we're that person.
Oh,
and we are not that person.
And I've been compared to Perez Hilton, and I'm like, you know, I don't think that our politics are the same, our interests are the same, what we have to say is the same. You know, I don't have a baby.
There's one difference.
Now he has two babies, I think.
Two?
He's a second one on the way.
Oh, I had no idea.
And I'm just like, how the hell is this guy running one single blog? And he's making enough money to have a, you know, East
the big
side.
Media's propping him up so that everybody else will be like.
And this is what, like, Michelle.
I would be very curious to know what his paid views are like.
Yeah, and Michelle Wolf is like, hey, you know, I'd like to. Here's my Venmo. Send me some money.
She did it. She did say that, right?
Yeah. I was like, so if you ever see us like spouting right wing propaganda or talking points on the show,
we're getting paid for
it. If you ever hear us say that both political parties are the same, It's because we're being paid for
it. Did you watch any of those videos, all that stuff that Sinclair Broadcasting was having all their anchors say on air? And it was like in like every market, they were reading the same script about like in the fake news media world. And I don't know. I find it really sinister because I'm going to get real serious for a second. In like dictatorships and fascist countries, one of the first things they do is undermine public trust in the media because then the only one you and then set themselves up as the only ones you can trust, and then they can just lie as much as they want, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
And, exactly. And they're definitely working on that.
Nope. Like, yeah, definitely.
Are we there yet? I mean, we're close to getting there.
I like to think that the number of people who are completely 100% I only trust what Trump says is a minority. I have no idea how big or small of a minority it is.
Yeah. It could be like 20-25%.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
You know, I mean, there's 39% that still support him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But some of those people are begrudgingly supporting him. They're like, well, he's a jerk, but at least he's white, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of, that's how the evangelical Christians are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, he might be a monster, but to be like, God's working through him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just insane.
He gets a pass.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kathy Griffin also showed up at the correspondence dinner, but she was a guest of the Washington Blade, which is a gay newspaper.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I'm going to go with them because the gays have always stayed by my side. And people were asking, like, are you going to bring the head? Are you going to bring the head? She's just like, no, the head is currently in an undisclosed location.
Yeah. It sounds like things got kind of intense for her after that.
Yeah, really intense. She really seemed like she was doing a lot of video blogging, and you just saw, like, her face, like, ugh. But she tours Europe.
Interesting seeing,
well.
Like,
terrified.
Our friends, our audience members, like, attacking Kathy Griffin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, Kathy Griffin is us. You know, I know Kathy Griffin. I've interviewed her several times, and it's like, she's definitely down-to-earth person, you know? She's as real as it gets. So, definitely, I think she didn't have the best advice when it came to handling the backlash of that.
Sure.
But... And I think shaving all her hair off didn't help her not look like she's going off the rails.
She did that to support her sister who had cancer, right? And who died.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the reason why she did that. But it did make her look a little off center. It was her Britney moment, it seemed, right?
The thing with all stuff like that Kathy Griffin thing is I'm sure when she went in to do that photo shoot, she wasn't thinking that all this was going to happen. She thought it would just be like, oh, we'll do like kind of a provocative cover for a magazine and there'll maybe be an article about it, but it'll be gone in a day. Mm-hmm. You know, like you don't... that's the scary part about internet backlash is... It really feels like it can just jump on you at any minute. Like, you can't predict when it's going to happen.
Right. Well, I guess during the photo shoot, it wasn't even... They were already in the photo shoot doing stuff, and they said, how about we do this? And
really?
So they sent out, like, the assistants to buy the mask and to make the fake blood. So she was, like, on set while this all came together.
Wow.
And so it was kind of, like, thrown together at the last minute.
Oh, man.
But, you know, she's got her show at, you know, in New York sold out. I think she was doing two nights. Now she's going to do another night at, like, Carnegie Hall.
Yep.
So, you know... A little bad publicity is, you know, still publicity.
And sort of Michelle Wolf, she's got a Netflix series coming out at the end of May.
Yeah, she does, yeah.
So, you know, people have said that she wasn't necessarily playing to the room. She knew that any kind of controversial things that she said would have gotten her that attention. And now we actually know who Michelle Wolf is.
Yeah, right, that's true. I don't know. I feel like, I guess it's just the climate or whatever, because I remember when Stephen Colbert was doing these correspondence dinners and saying much harsher stuff than that makeup joke, which is very mild, in my opinion. That's not, not that harsh of a joke. And he didn't get this kind of backlash. Like, not in the mainstream. It would be like, well, some Tea Party blogs would be upset. But
well, he's a man, right?
Yeah, there's and always that.
There's
isn't
always
there?
That. So yes. That's always a big part.
They really have a problem with women making them look stupid.
For sure.
One topic that you're very passionate about, and so are we, is cults. And the must-see TV is Netflix's Wild, Wild Country, which actually is a documentary series done by the same people who did Tangerine, the film about transgender women in L.A., on iPhones.
I love Tangerine.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie.
Yeah, it's the same producers.
That's so cool.
And it was
I
overlooked for Oscars. Did you know that? Tangerine did not get a single Oscar nomination.
I know, it should have.
It was a breakthrough film, extraordinary film, and did not get a single nod.
Yeah, on a number of levels, it should have gotten nominations. But yes, Wild Wild Country, something that happens, like when we're reviewing stuff, is sometimes it'll become available at the last minute. And so they were like, okay, on Monday, here's all of Wild Wild Country. We need your review done on... We need to run it on Thursday morning.
Oh, shoot.
So, It's only six hours.
I've done more intense binges than that. But it is very, like, you are in it. You are in now, that space.
Did you side with one side? Where were you at?
Okay. Robin, who we were just talking about.
Robin Pinocchio.
Yes.
Who writes for Wonkettes, but a guest on this podcast. Fabulous person.
Yes. Yeah. And my good pal.
Soul sister.
We have differing opinions on Wild Wild Country. She thinks the people in the town were the jerks. And I think that the cult were being the assholes there. I think that they were just being really, like, I think they were really looking down on the people in the town as, like, unenlightened, and it's some like typical baby boomer hippie, like, I know everything.
It's colonialism, and you are trash. Is how we described it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Part of it is, I think, like, we all have the capability of turning to violence when we're being when we're receiving violence.
Right.
You know, certainly these people there was naive in some, both sides were naive in regard. And certainly, you know, Ma Non-Sheila stands out to me as a person who is a woman who's dealing with racism and sexism in a very fucked up world.
Right.
And, you know, her solution by murdering other people and poisoning salad bars and all this stuff. You never look at a salad bar again.
No. When I was watching that part of it, I used to think back to when we used to go to the Wendy's salad bar when I was a kid, you know, and they have like those little like cups of pudding sitting on the ice and like, you know, the lettuce on the ice. And I was just like, oh, yeah, that was pretty gross.
One thing I never understood about Wendy's salad bar was how they differentiated into three sections.
Yes.
It was the Garden Spot, the Mexican Fiesta.
Yes.
And because they couldn't come up with an original creative thing for this, for the pasta area, they just called it pasta.
Yes.
And I would just sit there.
I don't remember that at all.
I would just get big bowls of pudding. Yeah. I would just get bowls of pudding.
I was like, can't you come like Italian extravaganza?
Yeah.
Italian pasta or something. But
yeah.
But no, it was pasta.
You just called the pasta bowl.
I love the salad bar at Pizza Hut.
Oh, I never been.
Yeah, and it was we would get all the all-you-can-eat pizza and then the salad bar, and that was the first time I ever tasted ranch salad dressing.
Ooh.
Is that your favorite?
Well, nowadays, no, but I mean, in high school, it was like, yeah, this baby.
Foster grew up in Puerto Rico, so it was a novelty.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I grew up in Ohio, so I'm like, yeah, ranch, like...
My parents thought...
We swam in ranch.
The most sophisticated place to eat was Ponderosa Steakhouse.
Your parents did not say think that.
But yes, we did. And when my father's funeral, where did we go eat?
We did go eat at Ponderosa.
That's right. And we're all like, oh my God.
Back in the day though too, like you couldn't buy ranch in a bottle. You had to buy the bag.
You had to make it.
You had to make
it.
You had
to
buy a little, like the little rack and mix your own like buttermilk and mayonnaise.
Oh really?
I'm going back to the 70s though.
Wow.
And I remember very clearly when I was living in a co-op in college, asking the food buyer to buy ranch salad dressing. She's like, we can't have these luxuries. And finally caving down and buying one of those giant tubs of Kraft ranch salad dressing, and that thing was gone in a week.
When I was growing up, the fancy place we'd go to was Red Lobster. Like, if you got a really good report card or it was like, you know, your birthday, you got to go to Red Lobster.
For the seafood lover in you.
I still love Red Lobster. I was at Red Lobster like 2 weeks ago.
Was it Lobster Fest or Crab Fest?
It was Lobster Fest. I went to go try the lobster and waffle, which was not very good. Because they made
I was not too pleased with those.
You know what was so great, though, in the 1980s, for people who are not familiar with this, is that we had great food photography. And so Dairy Queen ran these gorgeous, lavish ads. Pizza Hut did this too. Red Lobster, famously, the shrimp scampi. You're like, ooh, I can't wait to eat shrimp that's been boiled in oil. But, you know, imagine the Dairy Queen was a land where strawberries dipped into chocolate rivers and mountains of soft serve ice cream, you know, erupted through the mysterious fog.
Yes. I remember reading once when I was a kid, because, you know, I guess I was destined to be a journalist, but I was reading about how they make the hamburgers look so good in ads and how they would put little pieces of cardboard underneath them and stuff like that to keep them from melting under the lights.
If I wasn't, you know, the jobs that I have today, one of the jobs that I always wanted to be part of was being a food photographer.
Oh, yeah.
But the people who do, like, all those ads today, they use, like, a lot of high-speed cameras, and it's extremely technical.
Why? And, to make the steam coming off look good?
Well, because they do, like, things where they have, you know, for example, when Pepsi started developing their own 7-Up equivalent, I think it was called... Sprite or not Sprite? It was
no. Sprite is Coca-Cola.
The other brand, and the idea was having wedges of lemon go splashing through a wave in the air.
I'm picturing it as you're saying it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Or like that,
and gently like bounce off of each other, like
boom. Magic. Yeah. You know? And somebody posted that on YouTube, like how they make those ads, and it's extremely complicated, difficult process.
I bet.
Yeah, because you have to use high speed. And back in the day, it was like high speed film and lights and strobe lights. And now it's much easier to do it, but it's still extremely it's difficult.
Technical.
Yeah. And to me, I'm just always fascinated with that stuff. I can't not. I mean, I think that's part of the reason we do Cooking with Drag Queens is because we're always interested in food photography.
Yeah.
Just like we think about food here the way we think about drag.
Okay.
Like it's theater. And I always find myself when we're filming the series, it's like I turn and I say, this is theater. You know, you can't just have something made ahead of time, even if it saves time, because it's something fun to see food being assembled together.
You want to see that parsley get chopped to hell.
Yep.
You know?
Or when you're making salsa, you know, you could make that salsa
here's
together.
Some salsa, but where's the fun if you don't see it together?
And if you watch a lot of those cooking shows, like... half of the stuff is already made ahead of time.
Oh, the best thing is we just launched a new food website called The Takeout, which is also part of The Onion. So it's like now we
have... Is it serious food? Like,
it's serious, yeah.
Oh.
It's probably the most serious of all our websites. So like ranged in order of ridiculous. You have Clickhole, which is a BuzzFeed parody, and it's just like ridiculous. And then you have The Onion, and that's got its very specific tone. And then The AV Club, which is mostly news, but with a little sprinkling of The Onion tone on top. Of it, you know, like I'll do like a joke to open the paragraph, and the rest of the paragraph is facts. And so you have to, I don't know, I end up using the words allegedly, presumably, like you have to set off what the joke is and what isn't the joke.
Yeah.
So I end up using that kind of language a lot. So we're like, and then the takeout at the bottom, like, is no jokes. It's just food stuff.
Oh, wow.
But the best thing is they do these blind taste tests. And so about once a week, we'll get a message that's like, everybody, come to the kitchen if you want to try different kinds of peanut butter or different kinds of ketchup, different kinds of ranch dressing. We did ranch dressing recently. And you're just supposed to try to 6 different kinds and see which one you like the best.
I got to tell you, fat-free ranch salad dressing is the devil.
Really?
I like a fat.
Tastes like
you
ass.
Fat.
Yeah.
You want the fat in that, for sure.
Yeah, I don't drink skim milk either, you know?
Because the other thing with butter, with ranch dressing is the buttermilk is half of, like, the liquid there, or most of the liquid, right? And that's already fat-free. So the only thing you're really getting is the mayonnaise.
True.
And that's just, like, whatever.
Katie Reif, you're making me hungry.
I know. I love how we went from cults to ranch dressing.
The salad bar was invented in Chicago for all of us out there who don't know that yet.
Yeah.
A tribute to the salad. We're going to do a whole podcast on salad bars. Which is like, people really don't really like, you know, like all you can eat Indian buffets is as close as we have nowadays as a comparison.
But you know, Old Country Buffet is still out there. People still go to that.
But a lot of people don't aware of it. Olive Garden, they bring the food to you.
But nowadays, the salad bars you get is like in grocery stores, you know.
Whole Foods,
Mariano's, all those places, yeah.
But it's just, I don't know, there was something really traditional about the 80s salad bar that we just don't have the equivalent today.
No, I know what you mean with the ice and the kale on the side.
The kale.
Yeah.
Last but not least, there's a new study involving teens in Chinese high schools that found a positive relationship between napping in the middle of the day and sleeping at night. Ooh. You've always heard people, don't nap because you're not going to go to sleep at the right time.
Right.
Well, in China, naps are built into the post-lunch schedule at schools. And habitual,
like a siesta.
Like a siesta in Mexico or Spain. Habitual nappers, people who nap more often, had better nighttime sleep and neurocognitive scores.
Well, all right.
Wow.
So if you want to stay awake, go to sleep.
Wow.
Makes sense to me.
I feel like 15 minutes is the optimal length for a nap. This is my personal opinion.
I like 20 minutes to half an hour.
Yeah.
That's a good little fresher upper.
I feel like if I go that long, I start having a dream. And then when you wake up, you're just kind of confused.
But even like 10 minutes of like sound asleep is just so refreshing.
Oh, the best.
I want to remind folks that we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus because your contribution to the show is what makes this show happen. We wouldn't have fabulous guests like Katie Reif if it weren't for you.
Yes. Emma, just like ABBA being reunited, honey, it's all about the money, money, money. We need your support. Please go to feastoffun.com and make please go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a one-time donation or consider getting some fabulous Feast of Fun merchandise designed by us at feastoffun.com/store. I'm like waiting for you to say store, but
it's your line.
You can say it's store.
No,
because it's cuter. No. Look how much cuter it is when we do it.
Okay,
this way.
Do it again.
Feastoffun.com/
say your own goddamn URL. Store.
Katie Reif, thank you so much for
thank
coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
And people can follow you on Twitter.
Yes, at Future Schlock. Which was actually my, name I would use when I did Everything is Terrible.
Mm.
So Future Schlock, like S-C-H-L-O-C-K. Yes, I think I spelled
and
it.
And you can read Katie's fabulous articles at avclub.com.
Yes, and I'm actually, can I plug?
Yeah.
Okay, plug it. So I have a article that's coming up a week from Monday on May 7th that's going to be kind of a big deal. I'm going to a true crime convention and reporting on what I find there. So that's something I'd really like.
Have you gone to the true crime convention yet?
No, never.
It's coming up?
Yes, it's coming up next weekend. Oh. And the thing is, like, I meet a lot of people who are like, oh, I've been obsessed with this my whole life. And I've just kind of become interested in it over the past year or so. And I'm really interested in looking at it as like a cultural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. It's like a subculture in itself.
There's tons of books and have
so
for years.
Much.
Like, you can get like encyclopedias of true crime. It's
crazy.
Yeah,
so much.
You're like a best worlds combination of Daphne and Velma from Scooby-Doo.
Oh my God, thank you. Thank you.
So maybe you can solve the other crimes. Usually there's a corrupt real estate tycoon behind the Trump administration. Yeah. And he would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Exactly.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.